let's just talk football. So Keith brought up this idea in the pre-show that, I'll be honest with you, we're going to talk about the importance of this game for the Cleveland Browns and how you're feeling, the vibe check of it all. But he brought up the idea of the fact that this is a pretty sizable swing game for the Cleveland Browns. Because if the Browns lose, it is going to be fire everyone radio from the caller perspective, and we are going to be lion tamers trying to calm down and at the same point riff with the crowd. Whereas if the Browns win, you're going to be 2-2, and all of a sudden your perspective is going to shift back to, well, it's not 3-1 like you would have liked to, but 2-2 is a pretty respectable way to go into October. And I think the more I thought about it, Keith asked, is this the biggest swing game for the Browns? Yeah, all of a sudden, a game that you thought little of coming into the season feels like a bigger game than Dallas, Jacksonville, and New York combined because of the momentum and the negativity around the team.
Yeah, like I was trying to, as you were sort of going through this and explaining it, I was trying to think back to other examples from recent seasons. But what's interesting is, like, last year, there was probably some moments that felt like they were pretty big games. But I also think, like, the emotions of the injuries that kept piling up, I think fans just kind of went to a lot of games last year where it was like, hey, like, we're playing with house money. If they lose, we know why. They're losing all these players every single week. If we win, it's you know, a cherry on top. 2 years ago, I think, like, nobody really – it didn't feel like there was a lot of stakes to a lot of those games because you knew it was like this, let's just get through the year and get Deshaun back. And then the last year of Baker Mayfield was maybe the last time that you felt like there were some, like, major swing games going on, I guess. But, like, I can't even think of anything, like, recently that feels as dire as this one. And it's because of the context of everything else that goes with it. The Deshaun storylines of he's going to get his you-know-what together, the offensive line playing better, you know, Myles Garrett's situation in every game. It's like we're walking on eggshells going into it with him. Like, oh, his injury is going to rear their ugly head. And, yeah, if Kevin Stefanski and Deshaun Watson can't figure it out yet again, what does that mean for him? Are we talking about guys losing their jobs? It feels that way, especially, and what makes it worse, Nick, is like, this isn't like a late season. Grant Delpit called it a must win yesterday, mm-hmm. in his press conference that he did with the media. This isn't like must win from the sense of like, hey, it's late November, early December, you really need this one, and if you lose it, we're all going to be emotional about it because we're going to be like, it just stinks the team isn't there yet. This is like, your season feels like it hinges, maybe not to the team internally, because they always talk about turning the page, but externally, like, yeah, the fan base is hanging on this game because this is the stretch of schedule that you were supposed to be able to, not cakewalk through, but you were supposed to win these games. It was supposed to be Giants, Raiders, Washington, 3 wins. Maybe you start the season 4-1. Maybe you start 3-2 and you feel pretty good about things. If you already lost to the Giants, if you lose this one and knowing what awaits you later in the season, like this definitely feels like it's like a doomsday game.
So I don't think it's just about you started 1-2. I think it's about having another legal case out there with Deshaun. I think it's how bad the offense has looked in 2 or 3 of the games where they have looked. I mean, again, the Giants neutralized them and they looked lost and hopeless. I think it's 90 plus sacks that you're on pace for. I also think it's the fact that 3 games in, I don't feel as good of the defense or as good about the defense as I did last year.
Yeah, I think the defense obviously has something to prove as well. Like all the different contexts of things that we're bringing up all plays into why, like you said, Monday morning, if they lose this game, it is going to be mass hysteria from the fan base. And again, I get it. Like, the team's going to say they can block all that stuff out and they just take it one game at a time. But from the fan perspective, it is 110%. Like, it feels like the season or how the season's going to go hinges on this game, and it doesn't matter what happens after that. Like, if you lose, if you beat Washington, people are still going to be looking back at that Raiders game being like, how did you lose 2 in a row to the Giants and the Raiders as you get ready for the Eagles and some of these better teams that wait ahead? There are a lot of factors in play here, but yeah, I think this has to be like the biggest swing game we've seen in a while with this team.
So I don't think it's just the fans, by the way. I think the media is starting to chomp at the bit as well. So it could be a lot of noise next year if you lose it, or next week if you lose this game. I do think it's significant. I think at the very least, we got to go ahead and we got to chill out. Just the negativity. And it's not just fan negativity, media negativity. I think I think there's some signs, or last couple of days we'll get to, Spence, that tell you that there's a lot going on in that locker room. But real quick, let's get to the Friday injury report brought to you by Slater and Zurs. Experience you need, results you want. Visit SlaterZurs.com to get your free consultation. Kevin Stefanski today in Berea gave us an update on the tackle spot.
I know we have options. There's things that we can do, you know, based on who's available. So I think that's the biggest thing, is understanding that you have to get through a full week of practice, see where you land, and then make a determination from there.
Will Jed or Jack, are they practicing today?
They will not. They'll both be out. Jack Conklin, Jed Wills, David Njoku, Pierre Strong are out.
Oh, boy. That Friday injury report brought to you by Slater
and Zurs. Pierre Strong, man.
Such experience you need, results you want. Visit SlaterZurs.com to get your free consultation. Don't be daft. Don't do that. All right? Like, you can't pick the one guy. And by the way, Pierre's actually been good this year when he's been in there.
Yes. Special teamer.
It's everything. I want to be so verbose about this game. The Raiders are not a good team. And the things that are good about them are Max Crosby and Devontae Adams, and they're hurt. Christian Wilkins has not been great so far this year. Like, this is a team in the midst of, it wouldn't surprise me if they get a top three pick and are taking a quarterback next year. That's what I think of this Raiders team. I also still don't know Antonio Pierce as a head coach. I can't flex. I got no flex because of the way the Browns have played.
He's got a chance because, I mean, there's been a lot said, obviously, about how he laid into his guys last week after the loss to the Panthers. This is kind of one of those gut check games for him as a coach, I think, too, because it's like, all right, are you actually – they all vouched for, like, him being the guy. They all took a stand and were like, if you fire him, we're all out of here. Max Crosby was going to be mad, whatever. And if you don't even respond after that, like, again, what does that say about the guy that you hired as the interim coach? So, yeah, this is kind of a big moment for them, I think, as well, which is kind of, listen, I agree with you. Like, the Raiders are not a good team. The Browns
should. No, they're a bad team. Let's not do that. They're not okay. They're just a bad team.
The Raiders are a bad team. The Browns should win this game. I said the same thing about the Giants last week, and that's my biggest fear. It's like, because this is now a Raiders team that feels like they're also very desperate, and the Giants played the same way last week. That's the one thing that I feel uneasy about going into this game. Because everything else across the board, it's like, they should be better here, and they should be better there, and they have the better this, and they have the better that. But if they're playing desperate and the Browns aren't, then that's the difference between winning and losing, like we saw last week.
Yeah, I think my problem with this is we're still putting this too much on the Raiders. It's, will the Browns show up? I think that's the thing.
Well, will they play desperate? I think it's almost a good way to ask the question.
No,
I think they need to play that way, too.
You don't need to play desperate every week. You just need to play hard every week and play together.
Well, they don't have
to play
desperate. They didn't have to play desperate last week, but then they lost, and now I feel like they have to play desperate again.
They play. Well, but I think okay, so this is actually a great point. I think the Browns are in survival mode. So if we get past...
What's the difference between survival mode and playing desperate?
Just wait for it.
Or does survival mode trigger playing desperate?
Yes, yes. We're now... This
we're
is like,
on the same
this
wavelength.
This is like a board game.
This is the Twilight Zone now.
It's a board game. This is just after Park Place. So let's get to
from Park Place to survival mode.
So let's set off the fact that the fan pressure is ginormous right now. And you heard Deshaun speak to that. Oh, well, the fans aren't in the room. Okay. All right, is that a decoy play again? Because I've heard it four different ways.
Hey,
now.
I will say that's, you know, one benefit of not having David Njoku out there is he doesn't have to worry about him being an actual option for him on the field.
A
he
real
can keep
decoy.
Using Akins as a decoy.
Okay,
so.
All right. So let's take the fan desperation. Let's take the media desperation out of this. They're not on the same page when it comes to messaging, when it comes to togetherness. The defense thinks they've never committed a play, and you heard it. I loved Rodney McLeod this week with Ken and Anthony. Dude's got a future in this thing.
Yeah,
he's fantastic.
Great.
At the same point, we're not a matchup-style defense. Well, you didn't match up for bleep last week, and you waited until Malik Nabers went off for 100-plus yards and two tutties before everybody was like, should we get somebody better on him? Wait, real quick, because I want to spin
the
yarn.
Good. You're good.
So, the defense is thinking that they're just fine. We got Miles hurt, and we got everybody of substance hurt, or Deshaun coming off the shoulder injury. He's inconsistent. You've got Amari saying, well, maybe we should be turning the camera on you, the media. We've got Ken Dorsey and...
For what it's worth, we do have cameras in here.
We do, but you don't want to see this mug on cameras. But we got Ken Dorsey and Deshaun can't agree on whether Jordan Akins was a decoy. No one's willing to say who the fumble was on, and now these storylines have gotten to Friday. And it's because Not because of the media.
No, it's our fault. It's our fault, Nick. You know,
but it's because
we're the reason that they couldn't get that handoff.
That's true. On
the third down play there. That was our fault.
Tale as old as time.
Because, you know, Mary Kay Cabot was out there blocking them from making it happen.
I've been saying for a while, you don't think of it when you think Mary Kay, but she'll go out there and she'll get in your head.
You know how they say That laugh is going to be in my head. You know how they say, like, when somebody's running in the open field and there's, like, the turf monster got him?
Mm-hmm.
That's not the turf monster. It's just the media.
There's media arms.
Shadell. Yeah.
I'm going to say, the turf monster is Jeff Shadell.
They're just lurking in the turf, and they just pull guys down at the last second
and
scoring touchdowns.
And some of it left on his top lip there. If you guys haven't seen the mustache on Jeff Shadell.
It's great.
I was just
talking to Jeff Shadell earlier today.
It is. I love that damn thing. Never shave it. Never let it leave your lip there. Leave the turf where it is. But I think there is desperation. So there's the, well, we're desperate to win a game. And there's the, I don't know how this locker room's going to stay together if you lose this game. Like, that to me is like, so it's like in life. There have been a lot of times where I've been stressed, where I've been pushed, and I'm like, can I make the right decision here? Then I've been in survival mode. Survival mode is where you're literally minute to minute, what do I have to do to just make it through this 5-minute window, this 4-hour window, this 3-month window? That's different than, I could really use a win. Or, hey, things haven't been going my way. So I do think the Browns are in survival mode. And the problem with being in survival mode is it's really hard to grow in survival mode. If you're a little desperate, not hard, right? If you have a few things going for you and maybe a few bigger things going against you, right? It's pick one and go in that direction. The Browns have nothing going for them right now. The run game ain't it. The blocking ain't it. The passing ain't it. On the defensive side of the ball, they seem to think they're the 85 Bears, and they don't want to hear your questions about where this team is.
Yeah.
You've got Miles hurt. Denzel just had concussion number 5, even though he's good to play and has been good to play. Like, that's a lot. And now, you're going to a game where every one of those dudes know they should smoke these fools on Sunday. Every one of them know, on paper, the Raiders are not in your class. So it's a game that even though we talk about should win, must win, why are you want, like, they know. They know
these
guys.
If Grant Delpit's saying it's a must win, they know.
Well, but no, I mean, I'm saying
they know that they're better than them. Yeah,
they know that their league's better than them. So, like, at some point, it just becomes, do you believe in your ability to do the thing? Like, do you believe in your ability to out-talent or outperform another team? And so, following up on that Giants game, that's why this is such a big swing game. It's not just a fan swing game. It's not just a media. It is a, these dudes look like they're struggling with the pressure of the moment and the pressure of expectations and the pressure of where they are. I don't know what this looks like Monday if you don't get a win in Vegas.
It's kind of funny, though, because you bring that up. And I agree. Like, I think they hear this stuff and they are feeling it. But you ask any of those guys on that team, like, oh, how do you block out the noise? And all they say is like, oh, we're not on social media. We don't pay attention. How many times has Deshaun said he's not on social media, right?
Yeah.
But we know
that. Leroy Bickerstaff is.
We know they hear it, though. That's the thing. Like, we know that they're feeling the pressure the same way that the fans are feeling the pressure. And so that's what I think does raise the stakes a little bit more. I'll say this real quick on the defensive thing with the matchups of going. I think part of that is just like the vibrato of that group. Like, I think they believe that they can put MJ Emerson on a team's best receiver and he's gonna lock him down, and they think Denzel can do it and he's gonna lock him down. So I just don't think they worry about that. And maybe that's wrong and they have to revisit it. But I do think like that's the thinking there, and I get why they think that way, because I generally would trust MJ Emerson too. But he's off to a bad start this year, and so that's something that you have to pay attention to. And that teams will probably continue to look to exploit.
Just real quick, I'm not worried about getting my ass beat by a lot of people, but if Muggsy Bogues walked up and jaw-jacked me, I might rethink my position in that fight. You know what I mean?
That's where Jim Schwartz comes into play. But I actually thought his answer on, he explained that yesterday, like why they don't move guys around the field all the time. I thought it was a pretty insightful answer, as a lot of Jim Schwartz answers are, but that doesn't mean he shouldn't revisit it. So.
Was it over under 30 minutes of an answer?
I don't remember exactly.
Said with love.
I'll say under. But
said with love.
Only because I know that we only get 15 minutes. But anyway.
So real quick, the two games I thought of last year about big swing games that they faced, The first one was that Pittsburgh game after Deshaun got hurt in the Baltimore game, where if you lose that game and DTR looks bad, yeah, the next week they went into the Joe Flacco thing, but like, if you lose that Pittsburgh game, you would have lost all the momentum of that Baltimore game. And here's the thing, they had another big swing game 2 weeks later, which was after DTR got hurt and after Joe Flacco came in that Rams game, and they had lost two straight games, and you were heading into you were heading into the Jacksonville game.
Yeah.
That five-game stretch defined your season mm-hmm. and put you and got you back on the playoff stretch. That's where we are. Like, that's, and here's the thing. At each one of those, when going into those games, we thought, if you lose this, the momentum's going to start teetering. And when momentum goes against you, the earlier in the season, the better. So I'm here to say, yeah, it's still week three going on week four. But yeah, it feels like all the momentum's going against you. You need to get this going now because you also have two more games in the road after this.
So what I find most interesting about this whole situation and everything that you're laying out, I think, is spot on in terms of the pressures that they're feeling, what the vibe's like in that locker room. You don't want to lose guys. Kevin Stefanski, to this point, like the thing that he can pride himself on the most has been the culture that he created. And, I mean, we saw that in full effect last year. When things got tough, guys got hurt, they were hit with adversity, they stuck together, they found ways to win, and they made the playoffs, and it was a fun, enjoyable season that we all got to experience as fans, too. When you're winning, though, and the results are there, it's a little bit easier to sort of tout that culture as this great thing. And I generally feel like from how they responded week one to week two, and they played a lot better in week two, even though it was still kind of an ugly game, I still kind of lean on the idea that Kevin Stefanski's teams aren't going to like have slip-ups like that multiple weeks in a row, where like they just look completely outclassed and they don't come to play. Like, I generally believe that he gets his guys ready, especially after a bad performance like that. But now we've also seen two performances that were bad this season. I didn't expect that either. So, part of me is leaning on this idea that Kevin Stefanski's culture is going to sort of shine through in a moment like this, where they are desperate and they are sort of, you know, they really need this one. But on the other hand, like, I'm starting to wonder, because, and I don't know that everything cracks. Like, I do think, like, if they lose this game, you're still going to get a lot of the same messaging from certain guys on this team. But you mentioned, like, Amari Cooper. And sort of he's been a lot more candid, I think, this year than he's ever been since he's been here. And he's taking the shots at the media and saying the stories. I don't care that he did. I have no problem that he said it. I get what he's saying. Like, fine. If we're allowed to criticize him, he's allowed to criticize our questions and the things that we ask sometimes being stupid. That's fine. But the fact that he's kind of responding in that way and the way he started the season slow, like, that's a guy who's like, if you fall to 1-3, if he's already teetering on, like, checking out because the way he was treated this offseason, didn't get the extension, trade rumors, all these different things, do you just lose him completely? Like, can Kevin Stefanski's culture keep somebody like that engaged for an entire season if things start going south? And that's the thing I think we're going to get really, is going to be tested here coming up.
216-474-0092 does this feel like a huge swing game for the Browns? Meaning the big difference between and the variance between a win and a loss for the Browns.